So this is session 5. We want to continue the discussion we started previously. So this is part 2, answering the question, who should church plant? We've been looking at some essential characteristics for church planters, and so we want to look at number 5 here, and that's spousal cooperation. Spousal cooperation is the 5th essential characteristic for a church planter. Church planting is tough work. And the enemy will exploit any weakness in a marriage, especially in the early days of church planting. We invited a family to our home for a backyard picnic. We had met them at a church conference and knew that they were starting a church in a nearby city and wanted to get to know them better. We were just getting started in church planting and wanted encouragement anywhere we could find it. Well, we were surprised less than a year later to find out that the marriage had collapsed. A 15-year marriage ended in divorce. Casualties due largely to conflicts related to church planting. In that case, the wife was actually more committed to church planting and pastoral ministry than her husband. He was content to lead a home group, while she had pushed for more. He finally couldn't take any more and left. 15 years later, she is still drifting from church to church, trying to make something happen in ministry. An assessment interview might have saved a marriage. During the assessment interview, both husband and wife are there at the interview answering the same questions. At this time and that particular time in that church planting movement, there was not an assessment process. They just up and went, tried to begin church planting. And then all these things that really had been there in their marriage all along, but they all came to the surface as they began church planting. Well, spousal cooperation means the following. It means having an agreed upon concept of family life to which each member has input and commitment. Spousal cooperation means having an explicit agreement regarding each partner's respective role and involvement in ministry. It means having explicit rules regarding the use of the home as an office. It means evaluating the consequence of ministry demands upon the children. It means functioning as a team through individual and collective action. It means having a strategy for dealing with strangers. It means modeling wholesome family life before church and community. It means agreeing upon and sharing the ministry vision. It means deliberately planning and protecting private family life. And so questions like the following may come up in an assessment interview and asking about spousal cooperation, about family life. So questions like, what convictions do you and your spouse share regarding your respective roles in ministry? How did the two of you arrive at these convictions? Well, that will assist the assessment team in probing family cooperation. You see, our children are not to be sacrificed on the altar of church planting. And sometimes the call to church plant may be a call to prepare for church planting. And the preparation may be first in focusing on providing a loving and secure environment for our families. Then a loving and secure environment can be provided for the church family. The attitude that the church is his business, I just go on Sundays and sing in the choir, is an attitude some wives take about their pastor husbands. But it does not work that way with church planting. Our first home groups were in our home. The church telephone number was our telephone number. Everything was done out of our home to start with. And without spousal cooperation, our church planting efforts would not have lasted one day. And when some of our young daughter's toys were broken by the unruly child of one of our home group attendees, we knew it was time to find a place with a nursery. And so if your marriage cannot cope with the tension of church planting, please stop now and go do some other form of ministry. We kid sometimes about putting hubby through degrees and how the spouse who is not signed up for the course does much of the work. I'm sure that's not the case of anyone taking this course. But I hope you will share this church planting information with your spouse. If you've had any conflict management courses, you know prevention is the key to conflict. So involve your spouse early and often in what you're learning about church planting. Spousal cooperation is a key essential to successful church planting, So make sure the words, "Why didn't you warn me about this?" are never spoken in your home. One final thought about spousal cooperation. This church planter characteristic applies whether the church planter is male or female. A friend attended a house church in Ireland where the pastor was female. And I asked our friend, asked our friend what the pastor's husband's role was in the church. And she said, "Oh, he doesn't attend. I'm not sure if he's even a believer." Well, talk about the need for spousal cooperation. And for me, red flags went up immediately. And I cautioned our friend, "That's not a good sign." When she went back to Ireland a month later, the church dissolved. Spousal cooperation. Let's continue with looking at these essential characteristics. The sixth essential characteristic looked for in a church planter assessment interview is the ability to effectively build relationships. You see, like it or not, in the early days of church planting, people will come and stay based on the likability of the church planter. Good old-fashioned people skills. Well, notice the following traits. Here's someone who responds wisely and timely to express needs and concerns of people. Someone who displays godly love and compassion to people. Someone who's proactive in getting to know people on a personal basis. Someone who takes the initiative in meeting new people. Someone who makes others feel secure and comfortable in one's presence. Someone who responds non-judgmentally or non-prejudicially to new people. Someone who appreciates and accepts a variety of people. Someone who sees the need for balancing quality time with active and prospective members. Someone who's personable and caring. And so questions that might come up in an interview would be, "Tell me about your most recent close relationship that you've cultivated. What efforts did you make to achieve closeness? How did you overcome barriers such as distrust or fear of rejection?" Howard Hendricks of the Center for Christian Leadership at Dallas Seminary says, "Lack of people skills is the number one reason for failure in ministry by pastors." Well, the good news is that people can become more of a relationship builder. You know, take that Dale Carnegie course if you have to on how to win friends and influence people if you need to improve in that area. And take along key members of your church planting team. Build relationship making into the foundation of your church. Now, the final seven characteristics of an effective church planter are significant, but not seen as absolutely essential. Now, many of the final seven characteristics just go with the territory of being a church planter. And if you're not wired accordingly, adjustments can be made along the way. Sometimes it's a matter of additional information. Sometimes it's a matter of farming something out to someone else. But nevertheless, you're going to see that these things come up, and they are important. So let's first of all, though, review the six essential characteristics. Visioning capacity, intrinsically motivated, someone who creates ownership of ministry, someone who relates to lost people and other unchurched people. Those are ones we talked about in the first session. And then here's we've been talking about spousal cooperation and the ability to effectively build relationships. Again, assessment, as related to church planting, is not for the purpose of talking someone out of doing a great new thing for God. Assessment is for the purpose of taking a candid look at strengths and weaknesses, and sometimes assisting someone in finding where they fit best. As coach of many sports teams, it was my responsibility to figure out how the pieces fit together. Everyone on the team had a role to fill, but deciding who fit where caused me to cross out many lineups. An assessment committee fills that role. Who can fit best where? Does the person have what it takes to plant a church? Let's look at number seven now, and these characteristics, the final characteristics. You see, when we look at these in the light of an assessment committee, just think about it in terms of, you know, the best assessment committee is one where the committee members know the potential church planter. They know something already about the person's commitment to Christ. And they've observed the candidate in ministry situations, and they've had the opportunity to hear what other people have to say about the candidate. I attended an assessment interview like that. The other members of the committee knew the candidate. I was there as sponsoring pastor, and I appreciated the way the chair of the committee set the tone, relaxed, but serious. The committee members were well-versed in the characteristics of a church planter, these 13 characteristics that we're looking at now, and they asked questions related to the characteristics. I was grateful the committee members knew the candidate, as there was one question where he just did not have a good response. It was a question about vision. What's your vision for the church you want to plant? I had warned the candidate that the question was likely to come up, but it caught him off guard. And he stumbled around saying he was going to have a vision casting retreat with his leaders for the purpose of formulating a vision statement. I saw the other committee members look at each other and then proceed to gently tell him, sorry, that's not the way to do it. The leader, the church planter, casts the vision. Certainly other people can be involved in giving language to the vision, but the vision itself comes from the leader and is not a committee product. Well, I knew the candidate knew that. He's a very strong leader. I knew he knew that, but I also knew that he had strong feelings, and I knew that he had strong feelings about the kind of church that he wanted to start. But on that particular question, he did not express what was in his heart very well. Again, I'm grateful the committee members knew him and gave him grace while suggesting to him some books to read on vision. A committee of people who did not know the candidate may have eliminated him from candidate status right then and would have lost someone who has proven to be an effective church planter. Now, the seven final characteristics of a church planter. Number seven, committed to church growth. While this characteristic should be obvious, we're talking about church planting and church growth. Well, while this should be obvious, notice the qualities of this characteristic. It has to do with believing in church growth as a theological principle. Not as a gimmick, but as a principle, a theological principle. Deeply held convictions based on what the Bible says. Okay? Next, appreciating steady and consistent growth without preoccupation with the quick success factor. Someone who's committed to church growth is committed to numerical growth within the context of spiritual and relational growth. I call it more and better disciples. Someone who's committed to church growth recognizes that non-growth is threatening and self-defeating. Someone who establishes the goal of becoming a financially self-supporting congregation within a specific period of time, within that specific context. Here's someone who's not going to prematurely fall into a ministry of maintenance. Someone who sees the church project within the larger context of God's kingdom. And finally, someone who is not satisfied with church growth through transfer, but is committed to evangelism as a central strategy, focuses on sustained conversion growth. Well, the observation has been made that there's a tendency to stagnation once the church gets established. People have seen the church grow to some arbitrary comfort level, and they mistakenly feel, well, they've arrived. People fail to see the need for a focused effort on evangelism. They may even say it in ways that seem godly. Well, let's focus on growing the church inside. Let's grow deeper. The fact is that there must be a balance between growing deeper in our spiritual lives and at the same time growing wider as the church reaches other people for Christ. An assessment interview question that would probe for commitment to church growth would be, tell us about a situation in which you successfully applied your knowledge of church growth principles. Well, if the church planting candidate has been a leader of a home group, ask if the group grew by dividing and starting new groups. The eighth church planter characteristic is being responsive to the community in the following ways. Through getting involved in the life of one's community or people group. Through understanding the culture of the community or people group. Through researching the town's history, discovering the likes and dislikes of people in the area. Being responsive to those characteristics. It means identifying, assessing, and prioritizing community or people group needs. It means responding to the community or people group needs by allocating resources in an efficient manner. It means determining successes and failures of other organized religious attempts to respond to community or people group needs. It means meeting community or people group needs while maintaining church needs. This being responsive to the community has to do with understanding the character and pulse of the community or people group. And finally, adapting the philosophy of ministry to the character of the community or the people group. And so, for example, perhaps your church started in one area of the country, the network of churches you're part of, the denomination. Well, what will adapt to the community where you are now, and what will not work in the community where you are now? Thinking about these things, being responsive to the community. And so an assessment interview question like, how have you been personally involved in meeting community people or group needs? How have you been involved in the community? Would probe for participation by the candidate. Again, a very much different approach than for an existing church situation where a pastor comes into town and is already introduced to a network of people through the church membership. But here with church planting, you're going into a community and beginning to find out about the community and beginning to make inroads in the community, beginning to participate in the life of the community. The ninth church planter characteristic is someone who utilizes the giftedness of others. See, church planting is definitely not a one-man show, a one-person show. While church planters have to assume many roles in the initial days, the quicker, the better in recruiting and training other people so that church planters can focus on their own areas of best giftedness. Well, this is done through releasing and equipping people to do the task of ministry. And you do this through discerning the spiritual gifts in others, matching the gifts of people with ministry needs and opportunities, through delegating effectively in areas of personal limitation, through avoiding personal overload by delegating effectively, through not prematurely assigning ministry assignments before people are adequately equipped, through providing an ongoing coaching and affirmation and support to people in ministry roles, and through not placing unwarranted restrictions on other people's spiritual giftedness. And so, utilizing the giftedness of others, not being threatened by other people, but saying, hey, this is the vision for what God wants this church to be. You know, we're going to need all kinds of people and all kinds of help in order for this to happen. See, a commitment to developing the giftedness of others comes through a commitment to being an Ephesians 4:12 leader who desires to equip people, God's people, for works of service. And it's also an understanding of the nature of spiritual gifts for the edification of the church, 1 Corinthians 14:12. So describe a strategic example of someone you helped to recognize and use spiritual gifts they were unaware that they possessed. Well, that'd be a helpful question in an interview, an assessment interview. You know, just tell us about somebody that you helped get going in ministry. They had no idea or no clue that they could do this, but you assisted them. You released them to go do it. Okay, so tell about that. The tenth church planter characteristic is the ability to be flexible and adaptable. And that's certainly important. That would include addressing challenges creatively. It has to do with coping effectively with ambiguity. It concerns coping effectively with constant and abrupt change. It means adapting oneself and one's methods to the uniqueness of the particular church planting project. Means shifting priorities and emphasis during various stages of church growth. It means shifting priorities. It means doing whatever is necessary, whenever necessary. You see, in our history, in our own history of church planting, our first groups met in some interesting locations. A Weight Watcher building, school cafeteria, storefront, apartment community center, an abandoned hospital, the youth room of a church so that we could have childhood care down the hall, a community room at a shopping mall. You see, a church planter has to be flexible and adaptable. Number 11 for church planter, for church planter characteristics, has to do with building group cohesiveness. Putting together a core group is paramount to being able to launch a new church. So the church planter must be good at developing a nucleus group of our groups as a foundation. Involves quickly incorporating newcomers into a network of relationships. Building group cohesiveness has to do with cohesiveness. It means leading the group or groups to be focused on their purpose. Has to do with engaging others in meaningful, united activity. Has to do with sensing the morale of people and building it appropriately. Utilizing groups effectively. Has to do with dealing with conflict assertively, constructively, and tactfully. It has to do with using team building skills. So, building group cohesiveness. You see, leadership issues come up here. And so an assessment question like, well, describe a time when you effectively handled internal or external opposition to your authority as a leader. The 12th church planter characteristic is resilience. The maxim that you do not determine a person's greatness by what they know or what they own or what they've achieved, you determine a person's greatness by what it takes to discourage them. Certainly applies to church planting, where attendance levels can swing widely. A really good attendance can go from, wow, this is great, this is on its way, to, where is everybody? Is it really Sunday morning? And so resilience in church planting means experiencing setbacks without defeat. It means riding the ups and downs of attendance, of giving, of participation. It means expecting the unexpected. It means rebounding from loss and from disappointments and from failure. Who among us hasn't, thrown a parade and then have no one show up for the parade? And so resilience, so important. In addition to the natural kinds of disappointments related to church, to people, few church planters I've known have been able to retain all the original church planting core. There's also the serious matter of spiritual warfare. The enemy does not like new churches to be planted, especially if those new churches are deliberately going after unsaved people. You see, resurrection resilience is needed. Therefore, my dear brothers, stand firm. Let nothing move you. Always give yourselves fully to the work of the Lord, because you know that your labor in the Lord is not in vain. 1 Corinthians 15:58. I suggest that you write out those words and have them where you see them right in front of you, on Monday morning especially. Well, a question related to this in the assessment interview would be, describe a time when you handled unfounded criticism against you. Did you let it defeat you, or did you work through it honestly, keeping your eyes on the Lord's leadership? And finally, number 13 in these characteristics of a church planter. A church planter exercises faith. Is there an absolute conviction that God has called you to the ministry of church planting? You see, this kind of faith will be shown through believing in God's action, through having expectation and hope, through having a willingness to wait for answers to specific prayer requests. And so an assessment interview question like, relate a time when you truly believed in a ministry but were faced with a question of whether it could be continued, it should be continued. That'll provide the candidate and the committee with the opportunity to consider the nitty-gritty living out of faith. Well, there you have it. 13 of the most common characteristics of effective church planters. Where do you stand? Do you feel called to plant a church? Do you feel called to plant a church? Do you feel called to plant a church? How would you measure yourself against these characteristics and competencies? You see, these questions relate to the call. While you may not be, score high on all of these characteristics, there's going to be some indication God has been doing something in your life prior to this to prepare you for this matter of church planting. It's going to show up. It's going to show up as a kid. If you were, you know, in the scout troop and you were the patrol leader and you organized things, well, God was preparing you at that time. You know, in high school, if you were on the, you know, on the debate team and you just enjoyed, you know, engaging, especially with people who have another opinion, then God was preparing you. You may not have known it at the time. You may not have even thought about it in terms of ministry. But there's some track record. There's some indications that God was doing something in preparing you. Well, in the previous session, it was noted that Saul of Tarsus might not have made it past the church planting assessment committee. But in time, the leaders of the early church gave Paul the right hand of fellowship when they recognized the grace given to me, Galatians 2:9. Notice the intangibles in Paul's testimony in Galatians 1:11-2:16. He received it by revelation from Jesus Christ. You see in 1:12, he was set apart from birth, called by his grace. 1:15, went in response to a revelation in 2:2. Now, could a committee have stopped Paul from proclaiming the gospel to the Gentiles? No. Paul knew that God had called him. Perhaps there are church planting candidates that we have reservations concerning. Well, are they convinced that God has called them to the ministry of church planting? If so, let's find ways to affirm God's call in their lives. And like the Jerusalem church, find creative ways to let them do what they feel called to do. The Jerusalem church had shown that it was in no hurry to go to the Gentiles. 17 years are mentioned in this passage of Galatians alone. And there are people groups and areas of our communities where our churches have shown little interest in going. Well, give the church planters a chance to go to the Gentiles. Give them a chance to start a home group and then tell them to start another home group out of the original group and tell them to win some people to Jesus and start discipling those people and train leaders. And when they've done those things, then let's talk about church planting. But if they're not willing to do those first steps of church planting, it's doubtful the call to church plant is genuine. Steve Shogren in Conspiracy of Kindness discusses doing evangelism in a low-risk, high-grace manner. He calls servant evangelism. Well, because of the need for new churches, we must find low-risk, high-grace ways of doing church planting. It was, comparatively speaking, low-risk to approve Paul to go to the Gentiles. The Gentiles were not part of the Jerusalem church. Nothing was being taken away, offerings, attendance, leaders, from the Jerusalem church for Paul to go to the Gentiles. It was high grace because the Jerusalem church acknowledged God's call on Paul's life and gave Paul the freedom to go after the Gentiles as Paul felt led. What is high risk and low grace is when denominations commit much money to a church planting endeavor through bringing in consultants and experts for what basically amounts to a reshuffling of the membership deck, getting people already on a church roll to go be on another church roll. Instead, let's go after the Gentiles. Let's release the ones God has called to church plant to go church plant.